Welcome to Shir 47, and we have been discussing difficulties with the Heter Mechira, and in this Shir, we're going to examine legal devices in Halacha, otherwise known as Harama. The term Harama is difficult to define, but Harama is an important instrument of creative legal interpretation in Jewish law, and its function is both interpretive and legislative. So some understand harama as artful evasion, but this doesn't actually do justice to harama, which is not some sort of trick. It's not like a legal fiction. At times, harama acts to protect against astringency of a law, or to prevent a law from coming into disuse. Those that state that harama is just a legal loophole need to understand that our Chachamim prefer loopholes to transgression or forgetting an entire law. So before we discuss the Heter Mechira itself, let's look at some examples of Harama. So we'll start with the Maaser Sheni. Maaser Sheni had to be taken to Yerushalayim and consumed there. If the journey was too far, one could redeem the tithe into money and then add a fifth to its value. One would then take this money and purchase produce in Yerushalayim where it was to be eaten. This obligation to add a fifth is only if it's your own produce, but does not apply if you're redeeming someone else's produce. So in this situation, harama is used, and the Mishnah explicitly states that one may give his Maaser Sheni to his son, his daughter, to an Eved Ivri to redeem the produce, and then there is no additional fifth to add on. Regarding the redemption of a firstborn animal, a bechor, the Mishnah in Temura says that one could use harama to prevent the bechor from becoming the property of the Kohen. So I'm not sure how many methods there are of this, but one way to do this is to transfer full or partial ownership of the animal to a non-Jew. This will exempt the owner from the bechor obligation. The halacha also tells us situations where harama is not effective. There's a story cited in Nedarim about a father who made a neder not to eat by his son. His son was going to be making a wedding, so he attempted to give the entire wedding feast and room to a third party on condition that his father could join the wedding. As soon as the third party heard the request, he consecrated the entire thing to God. So the son protested and said, I didn't give you the room and the feast to make it Kodesh, to make it holy. So this incident came before the Chachamim, and they ruled that any gift where the recipient cannot consecrate the gift, that's not called the gift. It legally doesn't work. Now, how come Harama did not work in this case? If he would have given the banquet as a gift, it would be a good Harama. But if there's a condition attached, then the Harama was ineffective. So that shows us that there are guidelines in when we can and can't use harama. When Shabbos falls out after Yom Tov, one may not cook for Shabbos unless some food was prepared for Shabbos on the weekday preceding Yom Tov, and therefore preparing food for Shabbos on Yom Tov is a continuation and completion of what was started during the week, and this is called Erev Tavshilin. What should one do if they forget to make the Erev? So he can give his flour to his neighbors, and they could bake and cook for him, even in his own house. And this is another example of permissible harama. There are times when forbidden harama is treated more severely than intentional transgression, so that it should not lead to abuse. There is an interesting harama reported about Rabbi Tarfon, who was a Kohen and very wealthy. In a time of poverty, he married 300 poor women in order to allow them to eat truma. And this was clearly harama, because he never intended to marry them, but only to help them to provide food for them. Moving down to selling chametz. So this is clearly harama, but it's permitted, assuming it's done in a legal manner. The Chasam Sofer stresses that this harama is okay, assuming that it follows all of the proper rules, even though both parties are aware that the Jew will repurchase the chametz after Pesach. So let's see exactly what the Chasam Sofer says on this. So this is translated by Diane Grunfeld. The harama of this sale of chametz is a complete heter of the Torah without any doubt, because the owner carries out a proper sale in one of the modes of acquisition in which the non-Jew can acquire the property. And although both parties to the contract are clear in their minds that they desire the return of the chametz to its previous owner after Pesach, nevertheless, for the present it is sold, and the buyer in turn is entitled to sell it, to eat it, to consecrate it, or even to destroy it without anyone being able to object. However, as a friend of the seller, he will not do such a thing. On the contrary, he keeps the chametz until after Pesach and then resells it to the Jew. The responsibility for the safety of chametz during Pesach rests with the non-Jew. The Jew can even say explicitly to the non-Jew, if there is any chametz left in your possession after Pesach, and you want to resell it, then in all probability, I shall buy it from you at an equitable price. So as we have seen, there are permissible and prohibited types of harama. So is there some kind of rule where we can know if a type of harama will be valid? Some achronim understand that harama is permitted if we're dealing with rabbinic law, but harama is forbidden when it comes to Torah law. However, most achronim reject this and say that harama is permitted by Torah law and rabbinic law, and that each situation needs to be decided separately. So, at the end of the day, what kind of attitude should one have toward the harama of heter mechira? How does it compare to the cases that we have briefly mentioned, and to many other cases that we did not discuss? So this may not be surprising, but the proponents of the heter say that's no different than the other forms of permitted haramos that we mentioned. Just think about all the haramos that we said. We said Maaser Sheni, we said Neder, Bechor, Erev Tavshilin, and Chametz. These are all done legally, and all done to avoid certain stringencies in the law. So I'm going to read the rest of the section inside. Rav Kook, in connecting the question of the legal device, harama, with that of the consensus of the parties, Smichas Hadas, comes to the following conclusion. While in general business transactions, a legal device or harama is a dangerous matter insofar as it may mean a lack of consensus of the parties and thereby cause the invalidity of the whole business transaction, it is different where the legal device is employed to avoid the infringement of a prohibition, an iser, in which case the consensus of both parties is assumed beyond any doubt, and the legal transaction based on the harama is therefore valid. The Ridvaz and others hold that the harama used in connection with the heter hamechira cannot be compared with other haramos used in the Jewish legal system. The sale of chametz, for instance, the Ridvaz points out, is in reality not an alleviation, it's not a kula, but it's a restriction, it's a chumra. For as far as Torah law is concerned, a sincere announcement of one's ownership, bittul, is enough to protect the owner of chametz against the prohibition of the ownership and possession of chametz during Pesach, of bal yirah and bal yimatzeh. Our sages demanded the sale and removal of chametz by way of a rabbinic decree because they were apprehensive of a harama on the part of the owner who might not be sincere in his verbal renouncement of his chametz. Some halachis hold that the harama in the case of heter mechira is more evident or blatant than other haramos, known as a harama nikeres, and they see in this all too obvious legal device an obstacle to the validity of the heter mechira. Most halachis, however, are of the opinion that the real weakness of the heter mechira does not lie in the harama, but arises from other halachic problems which are not involved in other cases where legal devices are used. These problems are A, whether the sale of the land before the Shemitah really cancels the sanctity of the soil of the Holy Land. B, whether it is to be considered a valid sale at all, seeing that it is not entered into the land registry. C, whether or not, even if it is a valid sale, the mere action of the sale is permissible in view of the prohibition of lo sichanim. And as we know, we've already discussed all of these situations. Okay. At this point, let's move on to discuss other issues with the heter mechira. Until now, all the issues we have discussed applied before the state of Israel came into being. We're now going to just touch on some of the issues that have come up since the state has been established. The opponents of the heter asked Rav Kook the following question. We find that harama is used in many places in Jewish law. Why is it that the heter was never used before the year 1888? There have always been difficult economic times associated with Shemitah. You think this is something that the Chachamim in the past would have done if it's something valid. So Rav Kook replied to this that such a thing could never have taken place in the past. During the second Beis HaMikdash, as well as during the period of the Yerushalmi, and for many years after, most farmland belonged to Jews. The laws of Shemitah were also applied to the products of non-Jewish farmland, at least on a rabbinic level. And this gzeira was put into place due to the fact that the Rabbanim were afraid that if Shemitah did not apply to the small parts of the land that were owned by non-Jews, people might also come to treat the rest of the land improperly. And since this was the case, one would not have gained anything from selling his land to a non-Jew. Based on this, Rav Kook says that today, in other words during his time, most of the land is owned by non-Jews, and this particular gezeira no longer exists. When the yeshuv was re-established and was in such dire economic straits, this became the first time in history when it was possible and meaningful to sell land to a non-Jew. Since this is the case according to Rav Kook, so we know that today things are different because most of the land today is owned by Jews. Rav Kook understood this would happen, and he stated that this particular gezeira that the Rabbanim of old set up would not automatically come into effect once most of the land was owned by Jews. And this statement of Rav Kook, as I'm sure you could imagine, has been challenged by others that hold that even though the heter was good when most of the land was in the hands of non-Jews, today this gezeira is in effect and the heter could no longer be effective. As we've mentioned in the past, the reason the heter mechira could take place is because of the majority view that Shemitah today is rabbinic. Once the State of Israel came into existence, a new issue came up, and that is, does the sale of the farmland really transfer the property, as the property belongs to the state, as can be seen from the fact that the government levies and collects taxes? If, after the sale to a non-Jew, the state retains the ultimate ownership, then the laws of Shemitah obviously still apply. So such a sale is clearly worthless. So some get out of this whole issue because they hold that the law of Dina de Malchusa only applies to non-Jewish states, but would not apply to a Jewish state. And this is the opinion of the Ran, and the Ran writes as follows. He says, the rule of Dina de Malchusa holds good only where a non-Jewish king or government is concerned. For the land is his, and he could say, if you do not obey my laws, I'm going to expel you from my country. But this does not apply in the case of a Jewish king or government, for all of Yisrael are partners in the land of Israel. Okay, so this ends all of our discussions regarding the difficulties with the heter mechira. And we could say that the entire situation is most definitely fraught with so many different halachic issues on so many levels. But we could also state clearly that those that use the heter have great Torah masters on whom they rely. At this point, now that we've gone through many of the issues, so in lecture 48, we're going to begin to examine how Shemitah is kept in Eretz Yisrael today in various communities. Just want to be clear that in this series, we're not casting any sort of judgment on people that either do or do not use the heter on mechira. Our aim is to discuss the issues so we can be more informed, as explained by Diane Kornfeld. So this concludes shiur number 47. Thank you for listening.